Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli. And her intro was much cuter than yours, I have to say. That was really adorable.
That was adorable. So that is a fan, a 10-year-old fan from San Diego. Her mom, Kristen, sent that in, and I'm sure they're listening now. And I thought, yes, I agree. Her intro is much better than mine. So thank you for that. It made my day to hear that, and it was very cute.
Very. That was awesome.
Yeah, and we'll have some more feedback from Kristen later on in the show in our feedback segment, but I wanted to make sure that got that in there. But she does a really good job. She's got a future in broadcast or podcasting. She needs a podcast at some point. So I actually talked to Isabella about her recording an intro, like the you're listening to Raising the Bets part.
Uh-huh.
So maybe we'll get some of the kids to do some of the kids, not all of them will.
Kid casting?
Yes, we'll have kid casting. And I know exactly which ones will do it and which ones won't.
Yeah.
Already ahead of time. So it's been a busy week here in the Bettinelli homestead.
Has it?
Well, I mean, it seems like it's been forever since the last time we sat down.
It does feel like it's been forever. Yes.
Well, let's talk about the first big thing that happened. We mentioned that it was coming up. We had Anthony's birthday.
Yes. Anthony is now nine.
So between the February 22nd and March 4th of every year, we have children who are technically 1 year apart in age. This year we have a 9, 10, and 11-year-old.
Yes.
Sophie's birthday is coming up on March 4th, so she'll move into the 12 spot. But it's people get kind of surprised. You have a 9, 10, and you have kids 1 year apart? They're technically not 1 year apart.
But they're all less than 2 years apart.
Yes, they are all less than
our kids are all less than 2 years apart. So, yeah, we get these like little alignments.
Took us a while to figure it out. If only this was a video podcast, you could see Melanie roll her eyes at me. Yes. So Anthony is nine. What did Anthony get for his birthday?
Well, well, of course, Legos.
Legos. Always.
That's a given.
That's if he didn't get a Lego set for his birthday, I can't imagine the disappointment. Maybe implode of disappointment.
I think there was actually like a birthday or Christmas or something where he didn't get Legos, and the disappointment was really bad.
It was we vowed on that day. Never.
We learned our lesson, yes, as parents.
Yeah. So you got his Lego set. We gave him a Kindle.
Yes, that was the big thing was a Kindle.
They were on super sale before Christmas. I picked one up for him then, and then held on to it until now to give it to him. And because he is a massive reader of books. I mean, he reads so many books, right?
Right. And there are a bunch of books that we've bought on Kindle that, you know, Isabella can read because she has a Kindle, and Anthony can't really read them. And it just seems like I don't want to buy them again.
Right.
But I also would like him to be able to, you know, partake.
And we don't want, you know, the iPad in his room because you can read the Kindle app on the iPad, but you know, come on, he'll be playing the Red Rain or something.
Right. Now these are not the Kindle Fires that have like games and stuff on them. They are just right.
Straight
basic
up Kindle ebook.
Yeah. No, nothing except books.
And they give it some tools to lock it down too. He can't buy books. Like I didn't know these tools were there, or they weren't there when we got Bella's Kindle, but I discovered them when setting up this one. And there are tools to like controls to lock it down. I don't have to worry about him accidentally buying a book or accidentally getting into stuff he shouldn't, which is good.
Yes, that is good.
But there is a family library. I like the way Amazon does like this family account with a family library.
Although I noticed that there were some books that I couldn't figure out how to get them onto his Kindle, or I couldn't see whether they were on his Kindle or
not. The controls, the interface on their website could be better. It's not at all clear.
Let's see, what else? So he got the Kindle. He got Lego set.
A bunch more books.
More physical paper books. Redwall book and a Terry Pratchett book and something else.
Yeah, Brian Jake's Redwall series.
Yes.
Yeah, he's into that now.
Then he also got, the Millennium Falcon owner's manual.
Very nice.
A big Star Wars blanket, because he wanted more blankets for his bed. So he loves to wrap up as a little cocoon.
Yep. Shirt.
Couple,
more than one.
Couple Star Wars t-shirts, yes. Of course. One, it was a Mandalorian shirt, and another was a Darth Vader Van Gogh mashup.
I think we're at the point now where he could probably wear a Star Wars shirt every day.
Yes.
In fact, he does.
Well, and in fact, what I have discovered is that he is a child who is very particular about what he wears and will just sort of refuse to get dressed if he can't find one of his favorite outfits. It's just kind of easier to go ahead and take note of what he likes and buy what he likes, because otherwise I'm just wasting my money.
Right. It's not like he has to go to school in his particular dress code or uniform. You know, he dresses up for church. He wears a collared shirt and nice church pants and shoes. He wears his scout uniform to scouts. And other than that, you know, what he wears is what he wears. It's not really a big deal.
So, yeah, he likes pants that are pretty tight. He does not like loose pants.
And floods.
And, yeah, he always rolls up the hems. I do not know why, but he really does not like pants that have any sort of extension beyond the... He doesn't like them to touch his ankles or anything below the ankles. I don't know.
I
think it's a sensory thing, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah.
So
Star Wars t-shirts are his thing, and I'm happy to indulge him.
And we have a tradition, we've probably talked about it, where on kids' birthdays, they get to choose where we go out to dinner, special occasion, and the birthday child gets to choose where to go, you know, what restaurant. And so we went to Bertucci's, which is an small Italian chain restaurant, pizza, an Italian brick oven pizza sort of place. And it was okay. It was good.
Yep.
It was busy. It was school vacation week here in Massachusetts, because we don't do spring break in March like everyone else. We do a week in February and a week in
February. February vacation and April vacation, which I just thought was the weirdest thing when I first moved here.
Yeah.
Wait, you don't do spring break, you do February. What's this February vacation thing?
By the middle of February, it's been a month and a half since Christmas break in the snow and the cold, the dark. You need another break.
Yeah, having been here, I mean, we always got, when I was a kid, I went to Catholic school first through eighth grade. Our spring break was Easter week, basically.
Yeah.
Easter Monday through Friday. That was spring break. So they managed to get, you know, Easter break and spring break all like lumped into into one break.
So we get, so February vacation is usually President's Day, the President's Day holiday that week. April vacation is always starts with Patriots Day, April 19th, or whatever that Monday is that starts with that week. So, because that's a state holiday.
Do people outside of Massachusetts know what Patriots Day is? Because I certainly didn't.
They do now because of that awesome Mark Wahlberg movie about the marathon bombing.
Oh, did
that occurred on Patriots Day? Because that's the marathon day.
Did it explain like what I never saw the movie?
I don't know if it did. I mean, Patriots Day marks the day of the battle at Lexington and Concord. In the Revolutionary War, the shot that heard around the world, it started the Revolutionary War, which really didn't. But, you know, it's seen as let's just mark this as the start, sort of arbitrary.
Right.
But yes, it's a holiday here in one other state. I forget which
other state.
Minnesota, something. I'm not sure why, but some other random state, maybe Maine. Maybe Maine does, because Maine used to be part of Massachusetts.
That would make sense. Yeah. More sense than Minnesota.
it was an M state. It was kind of, it felt random.
Maine was originally part of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and it separated out to become a different state. See, I've learned some New England history since I moved here.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a tangent from talking about his birthday. So we went to Bertucci's, which was crowded because it was school vacation week, and there were lots of families there. I think this tradition of going out for everybody's birthday, given that there's seven of us or five kids, and they're all starting to get a little older, and they're going to start needing to order off of the adult menu instead of the kids menu. I'm not sure how long we can financially sustain that.
Yeah, it's starting to get tight.
My sister has how many kids?
Eight.
I always have to think between eight and nine, but it's usually seven. It's eight. They do a...
It's usually eight, but you know, it's usually eight. It's nine.
Once in a while, it seems like there's nine. I'm just saying. They for their kids' birthdays, the birthday child and a parent, I think they choose, takes the child out to dinner, just the two of them.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad tradition, and cheaper. So we may start implementing that. I think there will be some disappointment in the ranks. I think we'll have to go through a whole cycle. Like, we'll have to wait till next January before we do this.
Probably.
Yeah, I don't think we can, like, do this in the middle of the cycle. Well, Anthony and Lucy got to do it, and I don't get to do it. You know, I don't think that would fly.
Probably not.
So we'll suck it up. We'll have it. Plus, Sophie's just turning 12. We're just reaching that point where it's getting, where they're ordering off Bella is at the point where she really wants to order off the adult menu. Sophie still is okay with ordering off the kids menu.
Although Sophie pointed out, it's usually not quite enough food. She's usually, by the end of the meal, she's polished off the kids' portion and then is, like, poaching off of everybody else's plate.
Leftovers.
Yeah, like, are you going to eat that? That's more chicken fingers than you want, right?
This is true. Okay. It'll get more expensive. Ben is not a big eater, so I don't worry too much about him needing to order off the adult menu anytime soon.
Yeah.
All right, so that was Anthony's birthday. That went fine. Oh, and we had the cake that you made,
chocolate cake.
Yes, that was very good. Jump ahead to Sunday, right? Saturday night, I went to Mass with me and Bella, because Sunday was the Cub Scout Pack blue and gold brunch, not dinner.
You call it blue and gold banquet.
Blue and gold breakfast banquet. The BGBB.
Brunch banquet?
Breakfast brunch banquet. Anyway. If you're not familiar with Scouts, every year the Scout packs are encouraged to have a blue and gold banquet, a big to do. It's supposed to be a big deal. You're supposed to do it upright and decorate and make it a big deal. And it celebrates the birthday of Scouting, and it's only Cub Scouts, blue and gold, because Boy Scouts are not blue and gold.
Right.
I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if the older Scouts do something that's Boy Scouts. So-called do it or what they do, but this year that also coincided with Scout Sunday, which is one Sunday every year, and it's sort of variable. You can choose, the pack can pick whenever, where the whole pack goes to church together to celebrate, you know, that we are reliant on God and God's blessings and mercy. Scouting is very much into religion, civic religion of whatever type you are or whatever you choose. So the particular church that our pack is attached to is an Episcopalian church. I don't have a problem with that, but we're going to Mass at our Catholic parish. We can't skip Mass to go to an Episcopalian church service. We got to go to the Eucharist or the sacrament. So,
and sitting through two church services in one day
wasn't going to fly.
Yeah,
without breakfast. Yeah, so. I went in with Bella Saturday night, got up early Sunday morning. While you went to church, I was making pancakes. My contribution to the dinner, the breakfast, the brunch, was pancakes. I made 75 pancakes or so.
Something like that.
Which was a triple batch for us. I usually make about 25 pancakes for us. You know, the six of us who eat pancakes on a Sunday. So, you know, you don't always eat four. You might eat a couple, and Anthony will polish off any extras that are laying around.
Right.
We used to have a leftover pancakes. Do you remember that?
Leftover pancakes. Yeah,
it's quite
not
a
so much.
Not anymore. So we brought a bunch of pancakes. It was a lot.
Yeah, there were bagels and cream cheese. There was scrambled eggs. There were English muffins with eggs. There were a couple kinds of potatoes.
Ham.
There was ham. Big ham.
A sausage. Bacon.
Bacon.
There was danishes. There was yogurt fruit cups.
Yeah, there was fruit bowls, and then you could make your own, build your own yogurt parfait. Fruit granola parfait thing.
Oh. Parfaits are wonderful. Everybody loves a parfait.
Mm, yeah, it was good.
A little Shrek there. Yeah, and...
And coffee and orange juice and apple juice.
Yeah, and I think there was more stuff, too. I mean, it was a ton of food.
Yeah.
And it was because it was the pack, but also the people from the church who wanted to come down to the hall after the service. And apparently there was a last-minute christening that they had when they came down. Like, this family, extended family, came down to join in, which is kind of odd. It was a little strange to have these people joining. Like, I can't imagine what they were thinking. Like, what is going on here? And then
one big happy family.
Yeah. But it was good. Dinner was dinner. The breakfast was good. There were many fewer speeches than last year, which is good.
Thank goodness. Last year, I think we were about to like pass out from the boredom of the long speeches.
Yeah. Well, because you had like a scouting executive who gave the fundraising pitch, and you had someone else giving a talk, and just on and on and on. And on. Just too many. This year it was straightforward, to the point, and which was good. Because then we got right to the awards, where the kids would get their rank, the kids would advance, get their rank badges, and this will talk a little bit about what they've been doing and all that sort of thing. And that was nice. That was it. 2 hours. It was like 2 hours max there.
I don't think it was even 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And, then cleanup, which went quick because there were lots of people.
Well, and because they're scouts. I mean, scouts know how to clean up.
Yeah. Scout parents know how to clean up, and the kids run around. Well, actually, the kids did a pretty good job putting away the
kids
chairs.
Put away the chairs and the tables.
They did.
And I saw several kids, who'd been dragooned into sweeping. And
yeah, I'm not sure how much effective sweeping goes on, because I've seen those kids sweeping at den meetings, and they're basically running around with the broom.
Well,
it's not a whole lot of sweeping. Well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they did better this time. One of these days, I'm waiting for the broom to catch and get him under the chin or something, because I've seen that happen. It's going to happen one of these days. Anyway, so that was a Bloom Gold. But Sunday was such good weather. I mean, it's February. It was February 23rd. It was 60 degrees out by midday. It was beautiful.
I thought it was 54.
Okay. It got up to 60.
You're exaggerating a bit.
Maybe. 60 today, but it got up into the mid-50s by midday. And who is it that came? Someone came up with the idea, but I don't think it was you or me. I think somebody else said, I want to go outside.
Well, the kids were running around before we got into the car. And I said, it's beautiful. We should go like for a walk or something.
Oh, okay. So it was your idea.
It was me.
Okay.
It was me.
So we decided to go over to a state park, which is very near us, 5 minutes away, called Ames Knoll State Park, and has a big pond. We were very familiar with it. We go there all the time. And so we took a ride over there, and there were a couple of reluctant children. I don't want to go. I just want to stay. I'm going to just sit in the car. No, just come outside and get some fresh air for a few minutes. 2 minutes later, they're running off on the path. And stopping at everything. They're like dogs who stop and sniff everything. They're like, they run off, they look at something, then they run to the next thing, and they look at something.
Well, they have, it's kind of interesting because we go there often enough. They actually have a routine of we have to go here, and then we have to go here, and then we have to do this, and then we have to do that. And it's the same every time.
It's so funny.
And sometimes I would like to explore other parts of the park, but we never get very far around the loop around the pond because we have to stop at all the stations first, and then like by the time we're done with that, like maybe we go.
They're very ritual bound.
They're very, very rich,
and they have names for everything. So like there's this huge boulder that they climb on that they call Kanchenjunga. If you've ever read Swallows and Amazons, you know what that refers to. Because the kids in that book also name a hill Kanchenjunga. But yes.
Which Kanchenjunga, by the way, is it was at the time that Swallows and Amazons was written, they thought it was the tallest mountain in the world. It's been supplanted by Everest, but it's over there near Mount Everest in the Himalayas.
Yeah, it's a Himalayan mountain. But yeah, so they call it that. And then there's a dam, and then there's a bridge, and we have to throw things off the bridge, and we, you know, run into the woods. And it was fine. And there was a lot of people out. It wasn't crowded, but there were a lot of people out that day. A lot of dogs. And the guy on the bike with the radio was maybe a little much, like riding around with a radio blaring like a speaker. Like, dude, there's a thing called headphones.
That was a little weird.
The cool thing was, like, so the pond, it was like mid-50s, but the pond still had ice, which obviously was melting and was not safe. But it was thick enough that you could throw rocks, which they did, onto it, and it would bounce across. You
know, I was saying that this is something that was not ever a part of my childhood in Texas. Like, you throw something onto the pond, not into the pond, onto, and it, like, skips across the ice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't have to, like, have any technique like skipping stones. You just, like, chuck the rock onto the pond.
Kids from New England are so good at skipping stones on water because we get winter practice at skipping, but it because it slides across the top. You know what I mean?
No.
No, I guess not. So I thought you might buy that. So that was fun. We didn't spend too much time out there.
Like, maybe an hour and a half.
Yeah. And then we decided we needed to get something to make for dinner at home. And we stopped at a grocery store and picked up something to grill. Yay! We were grilling.
In February. Amazing.
I mean, it's not that never happens. I mean, some years it's impossible. But it's unusual enough. It's nice to get the grill out and get some smoke food.
And the kids ran around outside and
yeah.
And had fun.
The tricky thing is in February, the sun goes down much earlier, so you got to get it on the grill earlier than I necessarily would do other in the summer, of course. So I got to remember that. And then I had to find all my bits and pieces and bibs and bobs and all the tools. But that was nice. Oh, I should have put the cover on the grill today after it cooled off. Anyway, I'll do that tomorrow. So that's what we're doing. Then we come to today, which was, again, even warmer. It was, like I said, 60 today, and they were out for a good part of the day, which is great.
Yeah, they finished their schoolwork early and spent most of the middle of the day running around outside. Then we had our afternoon read-aloud time, and then they went outside again.
Oh, it's so... like
they were.
If you don't live in a place that gets winter-bound, where you're stuck indoors all the time, that time when you can get them outdoors for like a big chunk of the day, it's like being freed from prison. Not them, like us.
Yes.
It's like, go, it's a small house, the seven of us go outside and go, like, they don't want to go out in the cold. It's so frustrating. Bundle up, go outside in the cold.
If I was, you know, a better mom, I would probably make them, but I'm lazy.
Well,
it's just not worth the fight.
It's all so much work, and then they go outside for 5 minutes and come in because I'm cold, and then you're done. You know, it's like, yeah. I was probably the same way when I was a kid.
But I'm sure you were.
Yeah. But so when the weather turns and you can get, like, in the summer, like, they'll be out there all day, you know, just running around. It's just so much nicer. But just to get them outside and tire them out, that's the other thing, because that's why they go stir crazy.
Yeah, they were, I think, making their own ink with the ashes from the grill.
Yes. In the puddle water. So make a mess. Go make a mess. And Anthony had at least two cuts today.
Oh yeah, I had to play doctor.
Yeah, barefoot.
That also goes along with the spending time outside, though.
Yeah,
lots more. We got through a lot more Band-Aids in the summer.
Yeah, so that's what we've been doing. Then so let's talk about we're not going to talk too much about food. Because I know that this episode releases on Ash Wednesday, and we'll be fasting, and you probably are too. So I don't want to talk too much about food.
We'll be nice, and we'll spare you.
Spare you the details. But I did want to talk about a food-related topic, which is coffee and tea. Now, we are a family divided.
Indeed.
Yes. There are some of us who are coffee drinkers, and some of us are tea drinkers. And it's very interesting to see how that's divided. Now, I'm going to scandalize some of you and tell you that some of our kids drink coffee.
Indeed.
And some of them drink tea. And it's okay. You don't have to write letters. You don't have to report us. it's okay. Drinking coffee doesn't stunt your growth. Mom, that old wives' tale is not true. Drinking coffee doesn't stunt your growth. Your kids are getting more caffeine from their Coke than they are getting from decaf coffee, which is generally what ours drink, right?
No.
Oh, no, the girls...
Decaf coffee is mine, because I'm
right.
A wimp.
That's right, you are a wimp. But you'll be up all day and all night if you had a cup of coffee.
Actually, it's not so much about being up. It kind of keeps me up. It's actually about my heart starts to race if I have too much coffee, and I get like a twitchy eyelid.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's
Twitchy eyelid, my old friend. I have that.
Yeah, and then if I drink too much over the course of like a few days or weeks, then I start to get I grinding my teeth at night. And
oh
stuff.
Yeah,
it's bad.
That's always unpleasant. So,
yeah, it's not good.
So the coffee drinkers are me. I'm a super coffee snob. I grind my own beans. I have an AeroPress. I have the Italian Bialetta coffee, you know, stovetop coffee sort of espresso maker. It's a pressure percolator. It's not really espresso. I have all the gadgets for coffee.
And you and name a gadget and you've probably had it.
I've tried it at least. I don't do French press.
Anymore.
I used to, but the acids really mess with my stomach, so I need something that's filtered. I love coffee, but I'll also drink Keurig and even occasionally Dunkin' Donuts when we're on the road. Not my first choice, but I'll drink it. Coffee is coffee for me. I love coffee. Bella and Sophie are also coffee drinkers. They get up in the morning. They have their breakfast. Now, let's keep in mind, it's blueberry flavored coffee from the Keurig, which is
like, or French vanilla or
right. It's flavored coffee. Although Bella tried the regular coffee and she was okay with it.
I know they'll drink regular coffee if there's no blueberry. Yeah. They prefer the blueberry.
Plenty of milk, plenty of sugar.
Actually, Bella is fairly light on the sugar.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because you actually, if you finish off her coffee, you usually
I add sugar and milk if I finish off her unfinished coffee.
I'm milk, not cream, and no sugar in my coffee.
Now, I have to say, the ADHD is strong on my side of the family. My mom...
The ADHD is strong in your family.
Yes. My mom started drinking coffee. My mom started drinking coffee probably when she was about 4.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad, who was a colonel in the army, would make her coffee that was like mostly milk, but with a little bit of coffee in it. And she would have coffee in the morning with her dad. And she, as an adult, was not diagnosed with ADHD until she like... I was in college, maybe. She was an adult.
Yeah.
But she has always drunk coffee, like, all day, 4 or 5 cups a day at least.
That's related because?
It's related because, actually, how they treat ADHD is with stimulant. Ritalin and the other various drugs are stimulants because with the ADHD brain, stimulant has a sort of a paradoxical effect where it slows things down.
It calms.
It makes them feel calm. So that's one way you can actually tell if somebody has ADHD or if they don't, the stimulants will actually make them go crazy. But if they do, it will make them calm down.
Right. And so.
So my mom has always sort of self-medicated with coffee. She's never really done the drugs, or maybe she did. I don't remember. I decided that Bella has a lot of ADHD tendencies. We've never had her diagnosed, but she's pretty classically fits the pattern of my mom and my siblings. So I thought she was having such a hard time sitting down for schoolwork. I thought, well, what about a little bit of coffee, a little caffeine, you know, a little coffee, a little decaf in milk to see what happens. And she liked it. And it did seem to help a little bit. She eventually graduated from decaf to regular. And honestly, I could tell the days that she doesn't have coffee.
Yeah.
She has a much harder time sitting down and getting through a math lesson and writing and all the other lessons.
And Sophie, cup of coffee, a bagel every morning. They are creatures of habit, like we said already. A cup of coffee, a bagel, cream cheese every morning. The two of them are the same. Anthony doesn't drink coffee every day. I don't think he's ADHD.
I wouldn't be shocked if he were, but anyway.
Right. That's a whole nother conversation. But he doesn't drink the coffee every day. But when he wants something, he'll want coffee. However,
he does occasionally make himself a cup of coffee, like in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's kind
of
funny.
It's nice to have a cup of coffee in the afternoon. A cup of coffee all day long for me. I drink a lot of coffee during the day. But then there's the other half of the family, the other side. There's you and Ben and Lucy, and you are all tea drinkers.
Indeed.
And in fact, you and Ben are consistently like tea buddies.
Yeah. I like an occasional cup of coffee, but like I said, I can't do too much caffeine. Tea is really my thing. I wake up every morning and I have a gigantic 20-ounce mug from Starbucks.
Yes,
that I love.
The one that replaced the one that broke.
Yeah, I think this is take three or take four of gigantic white Starbucks
and
mug.
They're hard to find because it's not just a 20-ounce mug. It's a tall 20-ounce mug.
Yeah, it's tall.
Yeah.
So I have my cup of tea every morning and then usually two or three more during the day, especially in the wintertime.
Yes.
And in the summer, I do more iced tea.
And if Ben gets up before you, he'll put the tea bags in and he'll pour the hot water.
Yep,
he's very good at that.
He knows how to use the electric kettle, and he's
very conscientious about making mama's tea.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
It's very sweet, and he really likes tea first thing in the morning, and sometimes a couple cups later in the day.
And it does help him. Like he has mucousy issues. Sorry. And the tea helps with that. The tannins, I think, help with his breathing and swallowing and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's,
and it's calming.
Yeah.
It's refreshing. It's good.
And you just do, it's not herbal tea. It's like Irish breakfast tea, right?
English breakfast tea. Twinings is my usual brand. English breakfast or Irish breakfast tea.
Yeah. Do you do decaf on those? Are those decaf?
No. No. I mean, sometimes I buy decaf, but.
We do decaf iced tea.
Yeah,
but that's the other thing we always have around is iced tea. When I want something cold to drink during the day, it's either water. Although in the summer, it's iced tea, and I drink a lot of iced tea.
I'm a Texan.
Yeah.
I grew up drinking iced tea at dinner.
I used to be a diet soda drinker. I would drink Diet Coke all the time, all day long. But I gave up soda when I had the diabetes diagnosis. Including diet soda, because even though it's not sugar, the doctor said, actually, the sweeteners in it will actually make your diabetes worse.
I actually remember Jimmy Akin saying, like, that the artificial sweeteners, your body treats them just like sugar in terms of how it reacts.
Right, exactly. And so I gave up pretty much, like, I'll occasionally still have a soda, especially if we're driving, like, on the road, and I need something quick from the convenience store, and like bottled iced teas are horrible almost universally.
They're horrible.
Way too sweet. This is one thing where, as a Southerner, you're a little different. You do not like sweet tea.
Let's be careful here.
Be careful here.
There's sweet tea.
Yes.
Which is when you add the sugar when it's still hot, and then you put ice in it.
And it's really sweet.
And it's very sweet.
Yeah.
Because you can like super saturate it with sugar. I don't like that. I will sometimes put sugar in my iced tea.
Yes.
But that's not sweet tea.
Right.
That's just sugar in iced tea.
Us Northerners need to make those distinctions between sweetened iced tea and sweet tea.
But, I mean, I grew up, like, dinner is, the table is not set unless there's a pitcher of iced tea on it. That's just. Yeah.
So, the reason I drink mostly tea when I'm, like, iced tea when I'm thirsty and I want something cold, instead of water, is because if I drink too much water, it gives me heartburn. I've never heard anyone else who had that, and maybe someone could, if that happens to you, let me know. See if other people have the same phenomenon. But I get heartburn if I drink too much water.
That's weird.
It is weird. So, but if I drink iced tea or anything else, I don't. It's weird, I know.
I would drink, if in that situation, I'd drink iced tea too. I mean, I do anyway.
Well, that's the other thing.
I got my cup of iced tea right here. And I'm thirsty. Yeah.
The other thing with drinking things is the kids don't drink juice pretty much. Occasionally.
I buy juice as a very rare treat, and sometimes they have it when we're like out and about.
If we're out, yeah, that's a different thing. But we don't regularly have juice in the house.
They generally drink milk.
But we try to limit the amount of milk. We already go through like a gallon every day and a half.
Right.
So if we let them drink as much as they wanted, we'd have to have a milk refrigerator. But
and we don't have room for a milk refrigerator.
Or buy a cow. But absent that, they drink water, and we go through a lot. We have like a big Brita, like a big one. What? How big is it? Like 3 gallons?
I don't know.
It's like a big rectangular countertop thing, and we have a Brita pitcher, and we were just talking about that. We refill that like that Brita, the big one, like once a day.
Oh yeah, at least sometimes twice a day.
And a couple, and the other one, the pitcher, which we use to for the tea kettle and the coffee and all that. But that several times a day, we go through a lot. They drink a lot of water.
They do. Yeah, the pediatrician's like, make sure you drink water when they get sick. And I'm like, I do not worry about them staying hydrated.
They are well hydrated almost always, and they always have their water bottles with them. Like when we go out, Ben always has his water bottle with him, especially. So yeah. So I don't worry about them drinking coffee. They don't drink soda. They don't drink juices. And those are huge calorie things, for one thing. Those are giant. Those are filled with calories, which our kids don't have. If there's one thing our kids don't have, they're not overweight. And given my lifetime experience, that's a miracle coming from your side of the family. Because if I'm any judge of by that, they would. I mean, I've always had a weight problem, and I've always had, you know, issues with that sort of stuff. So I'm very grateful that they don't. Our kids, in fact, if anything, some of them are underweight. Anyway, that's so it's coffee, tea, and coffee drinking by kids. That's what we were talking about there. All right, so move on from there. Let's talk about what we've been reading or watching. This is an area where I have to say it's not all that exciting. I realize I haven't really watched anything new, really. The only thing I've watched is the new season of Star Wars Clone Wars, the animated series. The season 7, which they announced, which is on Disney Plus, is out. They had 6 seasons. The sixth season was like 5-6 years ago. Like it was a long time ago. It's been a long time. And it kind of got canceled or dropped or not renewed or whatever. And in the middle of the story, and people were kind of disappointed because the events of the series take place between the second and the third prequel of the movies. And people were hoping it would take us right into the third movie, which it didn't. And so I guess this is the final season that's going to kind of close things off and bring it into the movie. So far, it was pretty interesting for an animated half hour show. I think I've always thought that it did a really good job. Star Wars really does work as an episodic story. We only ever had movies, but it really works as a TV series, which we also know from The Mandalorian.
Indeed.
So I'm interested to see how this goes and what else we're going to get from them. There's an Obi-Wan series coming. And speaking of The Mandalorian, there was this great video that was put out by ILM, Industrial Light Magic, about how they make The Mandalorian in using the advanced techniques that they're using. They don't use green screen, and they don't go on location very, very much at all. All of those outdoor shots were indoors.
But not green screen.
What they have is these huge LED panels, almost all the way around them and above them. And the panels are also light emitting diode. So they provide the lighting as well as the visual. And it's so high resolution that when they film it, it looks like they're there.
So wait, it's just like a projection?
Yes.
That the actors are actually in. So they're not having to imagine it. They're seeing it?
They're seeing it, which makes the acting much easier. And things like, it makes it easier to produce too, because things like the Mandalorian's armor is reflective.
Mm-hmm.
So getting the reflection of what is around them onto it would normally have to be done via special effects. Well, now they just record it because it's coming off of the scenery.
Okay, that's really cool.
And what were they saying? The visuals are being generated using the Unreal game engine. It's like a PC game engine. They've advanced so far that the games are realistic enough to make Star Wars.
Okay, that's just crazy.
It's I mean, you couldn't necessarily do it in on a desktop PC. These are high end, but they control it all with an iPad. They control the lighting and all that stuff. They can change the lighting. They were saying like when they filmed that scene where the Mandalorian and the child are outdoors at sunset or sunrise or whatever, they could have it sunrise for 10 hours. they just keep it, you know, they just maintain it.
Wow, that's really cool. Instead of having to go out like consecutive days to get that, like,
right. And, oh, the weather's bad. Oh, we have to get, you were paying all this extra money to have a crew on location. And then the dust storm or the wrong weather, or it's always perfect weather. They do things like they do interiors, like the whole, like Werner Herzog's office.
Uh-huh.
Most of that was a virtual set, except for the furniture in the middle. They can even put characters like the stormtroopers. Some of those stormtroopers were not real. They were special effects.
No way.
Yeah. When they're riding like vehicles, like the speeder and stuff,
uh-huh.
they're sitting still and the you know, it's projecting around them.
Okay, you're just like blowing my mind. That's really cool.
It's a really cool video. I'll try to link it in the show notes.
I need to watch that.
Yeah, it's and this was all pioneered by Jon Favreau, who created this, but he also directed for Disney the new Lion King, quote unquote live action, which is actually just realistic CGI animals, and what was the other one? The Jungle Book.
Interesting.
And use these techniques there as well, even though they weren't, the Jungle Book had humans in it,
uh-huh.
Had Mowgli, and they use these techniques in that as well. And more productions are looking at this saying, yeah, this, what it does is it allows them to do cinematic quality productions like The Mandalorian on a TV budget, on a TV schedule.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Like they can change things like, oh, you know, that building in the background of this town looks kind of weird there. Can we move it like over there? Oh yeah, sure. Click.
Click and drag.
We've moved a building.
Okay. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So check that out. That was good. And then the other thing I watched was I've been rewatching, because of Disney Plus, all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, except for Dark World, because that was really bad. Thor Dark World was a really bad movie. It was the worst of the Marvel movies. But I watched Captain America Winter Soldier, and I must say, going back, I really liked it at the time. Going back and rewatching it now, knowing everything that comes after, makes more sense. I understood what was actually going on much better this time, not being a comic book guy. So that's what I've been watching.
I wanted to actually mention, in terms of what we've been watching, I haven't really watched much interesting, but I listened to something that was really cool.
Mm.
It was today. It was an NPR piece about Hagia Sophia,
which is the giant church, now mosque, in Istanbul.
Now museum. Okay. So at the time it was built, it was the largest man-made structure in the world. It's huge, and it's still, think, one of the largest churches.
It's one of the wonders of the world, of the ancient world.
It is. It's amazing. But so here's the thing. For like 1,000 years, I think I'm getting my dates right.
Probably 500 or 600 years.
Several hundred years. Music was written specifically for this church. Beautiful liturgical music.
That was
music.
Like 1,000 years, yes.
Yeah. So, and it was written and performed in the church. And so their NPR story follows two people. One of them is a historian and the other is a computer sound guy. And they met, and the historian said, Hagia Sophia, like we can reconstruct what the mosaics looked like and all of that, like this beautiful, but we just, what it must have sounded like, the music.
During the Divine Liturgy.
Right. During the liturgy, like that music, we have the music. We know what the music sounded like, but we don't know what it sounded like in the space, the acoustics. So this piece actually, then the computer guy said, we can actually figure this out.
Yes.
All we need to do is pop a balloon and record the sound.
So what they do, so because you can't, because of the politics and the religious politics, they can't bring a choir in to pray the Orthodox Christian chant in Hagia Sophia.
No.
Because it was a mosque and is now a museum.
Right. And there's huge tensions. Like, you can't have a Christian prayer service because the Muslims still think of it as, well,
as, what do they call it? What's the name? I forget what the Muslim name for it is.
I don't remember.
Because I know they don't call it the Hagia Sophia.
No.
So there's so that you can't, they can't perform in there and record it. So the sound engineer models the soundscape, the way sound would travel in it, based on popping a balloon, because the balloon, popping a balloon, is a known quantity,
right? And it's sort of like a single sound, a
pop.
Yeah, they used a word and I can't remember what it is,
but it creates a, you know, the sound waves that they record.
So she, the historian, goes to Istanbul, talks to the museum people, and gets permission to record after hours.
The popping of a balloon.
So this is a, you know, politically neutral sound. We're not praying.
Although I bet there still were discussions about it because it is going to lead to something.
Right. Anyway, so she goes in. She has special microphones to pick up the sound, and she gets a guard to pop a balloon and records it. It was really cool. On the NPR show, they actually sort of played the sound of a balloon popping in the studio, and then they played the sound that she recorded of the balloon popping in Hagia Sophia.
Right.
And it was amazing. Like
the difference.
It was such a big sound in the church, the way it echoed. It was just so resonant. It was huge. It was a big sound. And then they had a choir sing some of the Byzantine chants.
From the ancient Byzantine chants, yeah.
Right. And they put
in a studio.
In a studio. And they played a clip of them just singing the chant in the studio, just the studio sound. And then they played it with the filter. And it's unearthly. It's just so beautiful. The resonance of the sound. And the choir, who's, I can't remember the choir's name. Oh, we can put a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
They also have like the whole recordings on YouTube of like the whole song. Like,
okay.
Like 7 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes. I don't remember. It was long. And they released an album, actually, of the Divine chant. Liturgy, the chants sung with this computer filter on it, so that it sounds like we can actually hear what it would sound like to stand in Hagia Sophia and hear the chant as it would have been chanted.
That, and just imagine what that would have been like.
That's magic. It's amazing what technology can do.
It's time travel.
Right. Acoustic time travel.
Yeah.
Anyway, your thing about The Mandalorian reminded me of that. And I thought,
well, what an amazing, like, interesting, you know, thing that to be able to kind of, whether it's science fiction stories, you know, of a imagined history or the reality of the past, but we're able to recreate these things now. With the computers. I was saying to someone today, imagine if they had been able to use this LED screen technology for the prequels, Star Wars prequels, instead of the prequels are entirely green screen, almost entirely green screen.
Mm-hmm.
How bad that was, how much better, like, you could have got Hayden Christensen's performance without having to act at a wall, you know?
Right.
And a lot of the times, the actors weren't even in the same room. Lucas kind of screwed things up there.
Imagine what how it would have been like if they'd had Smaug actually, like,
on the
projected
on the wall for
Martin Freeman.
Always do that every time. Martin Freeman to react against Morgan Freeman. Now, that would be an interesting Bilbo.
All right.
So I want to move off from there and talk about some feedback we got. We got lots of feedback this week, which we're very excited. Let's talk about the feedback from Kristen, who sent in an email. Kristen's daughter was the one who did the opening today, the intro. She does that. Kristen said she does that from memory.
That's pretty good.
She always says the intro with me as she listens, and they recorded it and sent it in. So that was, I loved it. That was awesome. Made my day. So, she says, Kristen says, my daughter and I are big fans of Raising the Bets. I love your marriage journey on this platform. And if I ever sat at the computer, I'd be responding weekly. So, she says, my husband, David, has diced up his thumb while cooking for our neighbors. Just like I diced up my thumb there. He is also a pasties genius. We've considered a food truck. In fact, Could you imagine a pasties food truck?
I would be in heaven. Oh, man.
It's a good thing we don't live in the city where there are all kinds of food trucks, because I love the idea of food trucks.
Oh, yeah.
I would be at those all the time. He says he's also recently battled the clothes dryer, just like we did. Week after week. Week after week, I feel so grateful for this friendship, even though we're only observers. You know, and this is the great thing about podcasts is just like we used to do with blogs, is you can form real relationships with people that you haven't met. Melly and I are both longtime bloggers. My blog started in 2000, so 20 years.
I just celebrated 15 years.
It's amazing. And we've made so many friendships through this medium and the people we've actually met in person. And, you know, perhaps we'll meet listeners to the podcast in person. I've met listeners before. And there's talk. In fact, Greg Willett sent me a Twitter message today, remembering Catholic New Media conferences that SQPN has done in the past, saying, hey, wouldn't it be great to do this again? I'm like, yeah. And so who knows? We'd love to do it.
That would be fun.
And some have even suggested San Diego, which is where Jimmy is and where Kristen lives. So it could be.
I've never been to San Diego. I've been to San Francisco and I've been to LA, but I don't think I've ever been to San Diego.
I've been to San Diego Airport. I have a cousin in San Diego, so it would be fun to go. And of course, like I said, Jimmy's there. And San Diego, I hear, is a beautiful place. We've looked into, in fact, we've got so far as looking into places and things. And so it's not quite time for us to do that yet. SQPN has to get onto a solid financial footing before we can do that. We bring up the giving all the time, but we need to get to break even and be assured that we're not assured, but have some assurance that we're going to be around longer term before we start planning these types of events. But once we do, I'd love to start doing CNMCs again. That would be great.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun.
All right. So the next feedback from Rashad on YouTube, who says, I just put in my pre-order for Peace Talks on Audible. Peace Talks is the next book from Jim Butcher in the Dresden Files series.
Excellent. Yes, I've got my pre-order in.
Yeah. He says, I'm thinking I'm going to start my own 11th reread on the series soon.
Wow, 11. See, I just discovered the series a couple years ago. I haven't had time to get that many reads, and I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah, well, that's like my, couple dozen times I've read Lord of the Rings. So
I mean, my sister had been recommending the series for several years, and one of my college friends, too, was always chiming in, and it took me a while to get around to it. And then I'm thinking, why did it take me so long?
So he says, it's also funny hearing Jim Butcher talk about the series at cons and finding out tiny details or stories or his intention behind certain decisions that clarify things that happened without spoiling the story. That's one of the great things about going to hear an author speak about their work. So that's nice. Thank you, Rashad. And then we have another email from Lee, who sent us feedback last time. And he says, I like this podcast, but wasn't exactly sure why. He's talking about raising the bets. He says, it's interesting, it's nice, it's informative, it's funny, etc. But it hit me. This is like a letter from home when you're far away and going to be away for a while.
Aw.
That's nice.
That's very nice.
Yeah, I like that idea that we're, he says it's comforting and welcoming. You just love to hear what's going on back at home. Sappy, I know, but I like it. Not sappy at all. That's actually very nice. And it speaks to a level of comfort that it seems that people have with us. And I like the idea that we're inviting you into our home and we're having friends over. I mean, that's what it's like.
Without having to clean up because nobody can see the messy office behind us.
Exactly. And, without having to be an introvert with people in the room with you.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. Introvert doesn't mean that you dislike people. Introvert means when you spend time with people you like, it's still draining to be around
it
people.
Means that after spending a lot of time with people I love, I have to spend the next day hiding in my room
right.
to get away from the people I love.
Yes. Lee also says the info in this episode that you guys had was extremely helpful, especially the Benedictine thought process and what the Mother Superior had to say. This was about being keepers of your brother's anger.
Right.
Was
I remember that.
And he says, things I had never considered but made sense and were very helpful. The type of info I can actually put into practice. So very nice. He went on a little further about how the idea about not holding the grudges, but also helping other people when they're angry with us, how that affected him personally. And so It was very nice to hear from Lee on that. So I'm grateful that it did have that impact on you.
That's cool. I love sharing.
And so thank you everyone for your feedback. We love to get feedback. And
yes, thank you.
Comments on YouTube, comments on Facebook, emails. They're all welcome. And I'll give all the contact information at the end rather than do it now so that you don't forget. but we do have one more thing we want to talk about. It's as we release this, it's Ash Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
And so,
I keep forgetting.
Yes. We're still a couple of days out, but it's Ash Wednesday. And I first want to say, a few years ago when I worked for the Archdiocese of Boston, I started this social media trend that where I did hashtag. Show us your hashtag, which is the ashes on your forehead. Dig a selfie, post it online with the hashtag of hashtag. Which before I started using it, was a volcano thing. and it's a way of soft evangelization when Catholics are willing to be visible as Catholic, and the Ash Wednesday ashes are the surest way, or the easiest way of doing that. You know, when you walk around on Ash Wednesday and see people with ashes on their head, although more and more non-Catholic Christians are doing it.
Right. The Methodist Church in our town actually has a Ash Wednesday celebration.
We're going to have to step up our game and do something like glitter or something.
No, 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 no.
Mix some glitter in with the ashes. Oh, but
so wrong.
But this is a way of like when you post it on your social media, you know, your Twitter, your Facebook, and people see it and it reminds them of that you're a Christian, and B, that it's Lent and it's Ash Wednesday. And, you know, that's I think that's a good soft evangelization. You don't have to do anything more than that, really, at the most basic level. But we've been talking about how are we going to observe Lent this year with the family.
Yes.
We had a little discussion at dinner.
I've tried to broach the subject a few times just to kind of test the waters, and it usually fizzles out as children decide that there's a lot more interesting things that they'd like to talk about instead. That's
all the way next week or something.
Right. Oh, mother.
So we settled on a couple things. We're going to add a decade of the rosary to our nightly prayers as a family. Right now we do a set of prayers. We do, you know, Our Father, Hail Mary, Glory Be, the Act of Contrition. We pray for the souls in purgatory. We pray for priests and bishops and religious. And then each kid will pray. They'll have a personal intention, something to pray for, and something that they're thankful for.
Right. We started doing this really simple, stripped down formula when the kids were really small, when there was no way they were going to sit through
a whole rosary.
Yeah.
So we're going to add a decade of the rosary to this. And maybe it'll become something more eventually as they mature. But I think this is a nice, easy start and that's the one thing we're doing. Last year, did we do the jar thing last year?
Yeah.
So what's the jar thing? The jar.
Oh, just something I picked up from someone online, I think, rather than because kids are sometimes have a hard time being consistent or remembering. It was more of a instead of just picking one thing to do, write a whole bunch of things on slips of paper, like ideas, and then like sort of pick something to, you know, pick a
once
slip.
A day or every once in a while when the feeling hits.
Yeah, I was trying to do once a day, and it turned into sort of every once in a while when the feeling hits. I'm not really good at this, like, consistency thing.
You're not one of those Pinterest moms. Like, well, you're really good at the...
Anyway, but the kids liked it. They had things like, you know, do something nice for somebody and, you know, pick up some toys or, like, hang up the laundry, and half of them were things that Lucy couldn't do, so she would spend all her time like pulling out slips of paper going, nope, can't do this one, nope, can't do this one,
because
nope,
she can't reach or one.
Right. Yeah. They're all things that were too high up, and there was like, you know, say a prayer, like I put in like the various prayers that they knew how to pray, and I think the jar kind of suffered because it was sort of I didn't have things at different age levels. Like,
it takes a lot more work to really get the right mix of things in there that work for all the different kids at all the different age levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they kind of, they liked it and they sort of asked about it. So
they said they wanted it again. So
I might try to tweak it a bit.
I'd like to find some other things, but one of the things I want to make sure we don't do is a temptation to front load Lent, which is to go out of the gate gangbusters and have all of these things that we're doing, all of these practices and all of these. And where it might be better with family, especially with kids, is to ease into Lent and to add things as you go, right, or change things out.
Right. I mean, that's kind of sort of the idea of the jar, is to sort of maybe even like pick one thing a week that you were going to do consistently.
I think that would be the thing to do.
Right. Anyway, I am going to add some spiritual reading to our daily docket. We already read a saint book and the day's lectionary readings. I'm going to add a couple of other books.
Yeah, some meditation.
Maybe we'll talk about those next time.
Once you figure them out.
No, I've got some ideas.
Okay.
And so we're going to do that. And I generally try to minimize desserts and treats, like sweet treats.
Right.
It's not like a hard and fast rule, like we're giving up sweets for Lent. For one thing, we have a couple birthdays and other celebrations in Lent, and I try to not buy cookies, cakes, ice cream, etc. during Lent, just because it doesn't feel like it's really in keeping with the penitential season.
Right.
So it's not sort of a hard and fast, we're giving this up for Lent, as much as a, well, it's Lent, let's not buy that.
Right. I think it works for us. And that's the key thing, is you do what works for you and your family in your situation.
Right. I mean, when I was a kid, I always gave up dessert for Lent or whatever, gave up chocolate for Lent.
We really haven't made a big deal out of the what are you giving up for Lent with them.
No, and maybe I should have more. I growing up,
especially the older ones.
I went to Catholic school, and it was just sort of a thing that like everybody talked about all the time. Everyone did.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's been kind of hard for me to talk about it with the kids. I don't know why.
I don't like to talk about like what I give up for Lent. I don't have a problem with other people talking about it or telling me or whatever, but I just don't want to talk about what I give up for Lent. It just feels like, I don't know. I feel like I'm accountable to others. It could be, or does it feel like boasting, or that what I'm giving up might be too childish or not rigorous enough that I should be doing more. I don't know. It's just, I don't talk about it. But if I don't talk about it,
and I don't talk about it,
you don't talk about it, then it's not something that they know about. So
I think we need to do a little bit more deliberate modeling.
Part of it is figuring out what to give up that makes sense to give up to. I don't like the I'm giving up this vice that I have, this behavior that could be not necessarily sin. You're supposed to give up sin anyway, but like just something that's maybe not a good behavior. Like I'm going to give up gossip, or I'm going to give up, smoking. Like I don't do, I suppose like a lot of people, like I probably gossip at times, but you know what I mean? Like I don't want I feel like I should be giving up a positive good, but what is that positive good I'm giving up? I can't give up TV. That's my job. I have to watch TV for work.
Right.
I can't, give up using the computer. I have to be, so I have to figure out what I do. And it's always a hassle for me to figure that out.
Yeah, I have to say my most successful Lents have been, there was one where I gave up TV. And at that point, I had roommates who would just like come home and flip on the TV, and they would like watch a show and then walk off to their room and like go do something else. And leave the TV on. And I would be like, have been in there before they came in and turned on the TV, like trying to do, read or do some homework. And
then they turn on the TV.
They would turn on the TV. I'd get sucked in, and I have really bad self-control. Like when I hate Netflix's autoplay the next episode.
You can turn that off,
I need to turn it off. Because what happens is if I have to deliberately push play to start the next episode, I'll stop and think, do I really want to watch another one? And I'll say no. But if it starts.
And that's why they have.
I know. And the television is the same way. Like I would watch, a million episodes of like stupid things I didn't even like just because it was on.
It's a real world marathon.
Law and Order marathon. But When we met, actually, when we were first married, I almost didn't watch TV because I had done that like 2 years ago. I'd given up TV for Lent.
And so at the end of Lent, you didn't have any desire to watch TV.
Right. And I would just like get up and walk out of the room when somebody turned on the television just automatically, even after Lent was over. And I was pretty okay with that until we got married, I got pregnant, and like...
And you became stationary.
Right. And about like a month into that, I was feeling sick and the book was not doing it for me. And I was like, what are you watching on TV in here? And that's how I got hooked on Lost.
All right. We should probably wrap things up. We've exceeded our hour. So I encourage, if you have anything that you want to suggest that or let us know what your family does for Lent. You don't have to tell us what you're giving up, but if you want to talk about what your family, if any interesting practices, ways of observing the season that you do with your family, we'd be interested in that and love to share that with the audience, and we'll see how that goes. So as we wrap things up, I do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets and are helping us get toward that financial break-even point that will allow us to do things like have a CNMC, a Catholic New Media Conference, a gathering of the clan. And this week, including Edward B., Paul L., Inabong A., I hope I said that right, Ryan O., and Justin H., their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And so that's it from us. If you have anything you'd like to give as feedback, you can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send us an email to bets, B-E-T-T-S, at sqpn.com. And we'll put links to all the things we talked about in our show notes on sqpn.com. Remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page. Retweet us on Twitter, where we're at sqpn. And leave comments wherever you can. That all helps to juice the social media algorithm and get the show out in front of more people, which we greatly appreciate. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.